You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
We all know how important it is to keep your eye on the money, and not just your own. Stay on top of the latest financial and market news with Yahoo Finance, a podcast that releases new episodes almost every day. You'll hear a brief overview of the biggest news in the financial world, all in 3 minutes or less, right after markets close. Check out Yahoo Finance wherever you get your podcasts. That's Yahoo Finance wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Kick-Ass Politics. I'm Ben Mathis. Hi, folks. Big announcement here. The next podcast will be my 100th episode, and I've got the delightful Dick Cavett coming on as my guest. And also starting then, I'm going to be changing the name of the show from Kick-Ass Politics to Kick-Ass News. Why, you may ask? What about the politics, you may say? Well, I'm still going to be covering politics. In fact, 75% of the show will still be political guests. But as you've probably noticed, sometimes I like to bring on guests who don't necessarily fit under the whole political rubric. People like Michio Kaku, Carl Reiner, Alan Alda, Gilbert Gottfried. And the problem that I occasionally run into is that politics, as we all know, is a loaded term. They don't want to have to be divisive, or they're afraid that they'll be pressured to take a political position if they come on the show. So we're casting a wide net guest-wise and broadening the appeal of the show by taking out the word politics and just changing the show to Kick-Ass News. There'll be a new website at kickassnewspodcast.com because we couldn't get kickassnews.com, but it's not a big deal. You don't have to resubscribe or anything. It'll still be on your iTunes feed as usual, or SoundCloud or Spotify. I just didn't want you to freak out if you see the same logo with a new title this week. Also, I don't usually do listener mail, but I want to mention a couple of messages I got recently. First off, there was Bill, who wrote in, "Ben, I'm not trying to troll, but it's like fingernails on a chalkboard for me whenever I hear you say backslash in a web address. It's just slash. Backslash is mainly used by computer coders and programmers because it's a common coding character. Thanks for letting me vent a bit. Love your podcast. Signed, Bill." Okay, this one's been weighing on me because I'd be happy to switch to slash if that's correct. Believe me, it's a lot easier to say than backslash, but I'm concerned that some listeners might hear slash and think I'm talking about a hyphen. I don't know, especially, you know, if you get into regional colloquialisms and so on. I don't know if that's confusing for people. But hey, maybe I'm not giving you guys enough credit. Maybe you guys know better already, and you're thinking I'm an inarticulate bumpkin just like Bill for saying backslash all this time. So if this whole slash versus backslash issue is important enough to you, then write into comments at kickasspolitics.com or tweet me at KAPolitics and just vote slash or backslash. I'll tally them all up, and I'll count Bill's email as a vote for slash, and I promise I will then abide by the ruling of the masses. Does that sound fair? Also, Michael sent in a great quote after our Never Trump episode the last time around, and I just had to read it to you. The quote is, "As democracy is perfected, the office of the president represents more and more closely the inner soul of the people. On some great and glorious day, the plain folks of the land will reach their heart's desire at last when the White House will be adorned by a downright moron." That's a quote by author, journalist, and all-around wit H.L. Mencken. My listener Michael follows that up by saying, "I'm afraid our democracy is, quote-unquote, perfected. Love your show. Thanks so much." Gotta love H.L. Mencken, the old sage of Baltimore. He's easily one of the most quotable people of the 20th century. Thanks for sending that quote in, Michael, and I sincerely hope that you're wrong, but I fear that you might be right. Thanks for those great emails, and thanks for listening to Kick-Ass Politics, soon to be Kick-Ass News. And now, enjoy today's interview with the witty and smart as a whip, Ben Shapiro. Hi, I'm Ben Mathis, and welcome to Kick-Ass Politics. On the last podcast about conservatives against Trump, I played a brief clip of conservative journalist Ben Shapiro discussing why he is not supporting the Republican presidential nominee. And as promised, today's episode is my full interview with Ben Shapiro. Ben is a conservative commentator, nationally syndicated columnist, author, radio talk show host, and attorney. He began his career in journalism at age 17 when Creators Syndicate hired him to become the youngest nationally syndicated columnist in the U.S. Since then, his columns have run in Town Hall Magazine and Townhall.com, ABC News, WorldNet Daily, Human Events, Front Page Magazine, The Conservative Chronicle, Christian Science Monitor, Chicago Sun-Times, and Real Clear Politics, just to name a few. He's the author of several best-selling books, including Brainwashed, How Universities Indoctrinate America's Youth, Bullies, How the Left's Culture of Fear and Intimidation Silences America, and The People vs. Barack Obama, The Criminal Case Against the Obama Administration. He co-founded Truth Revolt, a media watchdog website intended to be a conservative answer to Media Matters, and in 2012 he became editor-at-large for Breitbart.com, where he remained until he resigned this past March in protest over the news site's refusal to stand by Shapiro's fellow reporter Michelle Fields when she was assaulted by then-Trump campaign manager Corey Lewandowski. Since then, Ben Shapiro started his own conservative news site called DailyWire.com. He's also launched a podcast called The Ben Shapiro Show, and he can be heard on the radio on KRLA's The Morning Answer, which he co-hosts with Alicia Krauss and Brian Whitman. Recently, Ben Shapiro has also received praise and controversy for his speeches to universities around America, in which he's argued that political correctness on our university campuses is a direct assault on free speech. We'll talk about that on today's episode, and how he says the real movement against political correctness is getting tarnished by Donald Trump's misuse of it as a blanket excuse for his own bad behavior. He'll discuss his overall opinion of the Republican nominee. We'll talk journalistic integrity and how that figured into his exit from Breitbart.com. And he'll give his tips for winning an argument with a liberal. Coming up with The Daily Wire's Ben Shapiro in just a moment.
To Washington, it's time for Kick-Ass Politics. And now here's your host, Ben Mathis.
Today I'm joined by Ben Shapiro. He's a syndicated columnist and editor-in-chief at DailyWire.com. He co-hosts The Morning Answer with Alicia Krauss on KRLA, and he hosts a podcast called The Ben Shapiro Show. Ben, thanks for sitting down with me.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
I'm curious, you originally started your career on a legal track. You graduated from Harvard Law, and you worked as an attorney at Goodwin Procter here in L.A. How did you get lured into politics?
So, I mean, I was actually political before I was legal. So I had a syndicated column when I was 17, and then I went to law school. And when I finished law school, I was working at a firm to pay off my debt like everybody else. And after about 10 months of that, I was like, this is terrible. And I quit, and I ended up working for Talk Radio Network, where I was the lawyer there working with Laura Ingraham and Michael Savage. Which was interesting, and then I ended up working with Andrew Breitbart, but I'd known Andrew forever by that point. So I've had a long and checkered political career.
Now, do you still practice?
Occasionally, but I try not to.
Okay,
I'll read contracts for friends. Contract law.
Okay, or only when you're suing universities and.
Oh no! Then I hire somebody else. Right? Then Alliance Defending Freedom comes in. Alliance Defense Fund.
Well, until very recently, you were editor at large at Breitbart.
Mm-hmm.
Having joined in 2012, I believe that was the same year Breitbart died. Breitbart.
Andrew hired me before he died.
Yeah. Did you know Andrew, or did you afterwards?
No, I knew Andrew forever. I knew Andrew for 10 years before he died. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I met him before I even really started. I was 16, and he was, I guess he was 30, maybe. And so he was, which is weird because now I'm 32. But I met him when I was writing for the UCLA Daily Bruin, and he lived in Westwood, and he picked up a copy of the UCLA paper, okay. And he saw who's this crazy conservative kid who's writing, and so he emailed me, and he said, I work with Matt Drudge, you want to grab lunch?
Oh, that's awesome.
And so we were friends for
yeah,
a decade.
Yeah, I forgot he lived in Westwood.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, he was such a terrific guy.
Yeah, he was.
Now, most people listening, of course, know that you resigned from Breitbart 2 months ago when management at Breitbart refused to back their reporter, Michelle Fields, who was assaulted by Trump's now former campaign manager, Corey Lewandowski, as of, I think, a week ago.
Yeah.
He got the axe, finally.
Yeah.
I was apoplectic that any news outlet would be so in the tank for any candidate that they would throw their own journalist under the bus. I can't imagine that Andrew Breitbart would have done that.
No, I mean, as I said at the time, Andrew would have flown down to Florida. He would have asked Trump personally for an apology, and that would have been that. I mean, that's the idea that, again, the management did not do right by its own reporter. Forget about what you think of the incident itself, whether they think it was overblown. Yeah. The fact is that she was grabbed, she was bruised, and the Trump campaign decided that instead of honestly just issuing an apology, even backdoor issuing an apology, which is what she originally wanted, they decided they were going to call her a liar and they were going to call her a hoaxer, and they changed their story 7 or 8 times. And the Trump people were willing to follow along with this, which I felt kind of reprehensible. I mean, if you want to make the case that it wasn't that big a deal in the first place, then make that case. But that wasn't the case they made. They made the case that she was never touched, right, and that she was crazy, that it had never happened in the first place, that it was some random Secret Service person who touched her, and then it was that Corey Lewandowski did touch her, but he was trying to protect Trump because she was actually some sort of pen bomber. The whole thing was absurd. Yeah. It was absurd. It was absurdity piled on top of absurdity. This is what happens when someone tells a lie, and then they get caught in that lie, and they move on to the next lie.
Well, I mean, isn't it symptomatic of one of Trump's biggest problems is that even if he makes a mistake, and it's a blatant mistake, he can't just admit fault.
Yes.
He can't apologize. He's never wrong, according to him.
It's his biggest problem. He doesn't know what he doesn't know.
Yeah.
And as president, that's a pretty scary quality. You want somebody who at least, like, people keep saying, oh, you put the right advisors around him. I have no evidence whatsoever he even listens to his advisors. Every time somebody asks him about his advisors, they did it over the weekend. He says, well, advisors are stupid. It's like, really? You didn't know what Brexit was a week and a half ago, dude. Like, it's frustrating to hear the alternative versions of Trump from Trump supporters. Yeah. One is that he's an absolute genius playing 4D chess, and the other is that he's just learning. He's a business person. You got to cut him slack. Well, which is it? I mean, is he a genius or is he just some neophyte who stumbled onto the scene after being a Democrat for the last 60 years?
Yeah, and the thing that bugs me is this whole line that they keep putting out there of, oh, well, he just said that to get the nomination.
Right.
He's going to moderate his tone when he's running in the general election. I'm like, so you're telling me he's a liar?
Well, it's like,
I guess every politician would say that secretly,
right,
but...
Exactly. it's only you know the real Trump. Like, none of us do. Only you, right? It's the same symptom as the girl who brings home her drug-addicted, meth-addled biker boyfriend who's already married, and she's the parents go, wait a second, this is not a good relationship. She goes, you don't know him the way I do, right? If only you knew him deep down, and he's making changes in his life. He's evolving. And it's like, that's fine. He should have done the evolution before he decided to become president of the United States. But this is my biggest critique of the Trump movement. Like, I totally understand. I get the argument. I have sympathy for the argument. I'll vote for Trump over Hillary because he's the lesser of two evils. I totally get that. Yeah. What I don't get is the enthusiastic embrace for Trump's absolute incompetence, his bigotry, his nastiness, the fact that he doesn't know what the hell he's talking about, the fact that he doesn't know what the Constitution is. Don't cover for that stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, I understand you want to win, but to be forced into a position where you now have to support every stupid thing he says. One of two things is going to happen here. Either he's going to win, in which case he ain't going to listen to you, or he's going to lose, in which case you just sacrificed all of your principles to lose by 10 points to Hillary Clinton. Congratulations.
Yeah, I am so sick of Trump apologists. What? I mean, if they could just be even-handed and honest about it, and when he screws up,
well,
to say, okay, he screwed up. I would expect better, and I hope that he tries better the next time.
I'm not a victim, but I've taken it on the chin from every Trumpster there probably is, and Trumpsters who have yet to be born. But the fact is that this is the part that drives me nuts about all of this is the Trump apologists who sit out there basically justifying every single thing that he does and then saying they're going to change the way government works. So the way you're going to change government is by appointing some guy who you think can never do anything wrong. We just had 8 years of that. Was it really that grand?
Yeah.
And it's very, very frustrating stuff. It really is.
And I think that you've been pretty fair to Donald Trump.
Well, this is the other thing I was going to say is that when Trump gets hit unfairly, I've defended Donald Trump.
Yeah.
I mean, I said when he gave that radical Islam speech 2 weeks ago, I said, a good speech. when he went after Hillary Clinton with hammer and tongs, I said, this is a good speech. Like, what he's saying here, not the stuff about himself and trade, which is idiotic, but all the stuff he's saying about Hillary, that stuff's great. It's great stuff. Why can't we see this Trump all the time? Like, I do my best to try and at least, when Trump does something right, say he's doing something right. But when he does something wrong, I'm not gonna sit aside and pretend that it's okay. I mean, you switch your position 8 times on abortion in 24 hours, or you switch your gun terror list position 3 times inside of a week. I'm going to point that out because people have to know whether they can trust you.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, politics, as Mitt Romney was fond of saying, ain't beanbag. And the fact is that Trump sort of thinks it is. And when he gets in there, do you really think he's going to stand up for your principles when the fires are raging? Do you really think that he's going to stand up for a conservative Supreme Court nominee when the fires are raging? Now, people will say, okay, well, he'll do better than Hillary will on the Supreme Court nominee. So you just have to kind of like put your concerns aside. Again, you want to say he'll do better than she will on that? I think there's a significant possibility that that's true because I'm intellectually honest and I'll acknowledge that. But I will also acknowledge that there's a significant possibility it's not true and that you, the second half of that sentence, put your feelings aside or not even put your feelings, put the facts aside,
mm-hmm.
right? Just shut up and get in the back seat.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm happy to give you, I'll give your argument credence. I'll even do that. But I'm not going to pretend that when he does stupid crap, it's not stupid crap.
Yeah, I hate to say it, but at least Hillary, I know what I'm getting.
So this is the big question mark
with Trump concerns me.
Right. So the other argument
is
that Donald Trump.
How do I know he's not going to be more liberal than Hillary once
right.
he gets
so
in office?
Right. So this is sort of the Alexander Hamilton versus William F. Buckley rule. So
right.
William F. Buckley says you pick the most conservative candidate who can win. In this case, Trump is the most conservative candidate who can win. I'm not sure, by the way, that Buckley backs Trump. I really am not, considering that he helped throw the Birchers out of the party. And these are basically
He said in his own time he repudiated Trump. He said
right.
that he was a clown.
Right, exactly. So it's possible he still would have said better than Hillary, but
yeah.
but that's at least arguable. But the Buckley
yeah.
rule is the most conservative person who can win. But then there's the Alexander yeah. Hamilton rule, and it is if you're going to have a known enemy, then
right.
let them be open about it.
Yeah.
Let it not be somebody within your own ranks.
Yeah,
and
I'd rather have an honest enemy than a false friend.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
We're going to take a quick break right now, and then I'll be back to talk more with the Daily Wire's Ben Shapiro in just a moment. Hey, folks. Do you like reading, but you find it's getting harder and harder to make time to curl up with a good book? Well, there's a solution. Give audiobooks a try. They're perfect for your commute to work or if you're working out at the gym, a relaxing bath, or any time, really. And right now, you can take an audiobook for a spin with a special promotion just for our listeners from Audible.com. Just go to audibletrial.com/kickasspolitics to get a free 30-day trial and download any of Audible's 180,000 titles. That's audibletrial.com/kickasspolitics. Or click on the sponsor link on our webpage to download the free audiobook of your choice. And now, back to more with today's guest, Ben Shapiro. What happened at Breitbart? What was your take on things? Because I have
so
to say...
So there's only some of this I can talk about legally, so I'll say as much as I can legally.
Okay, fair enough.
I'll say as much as I can legally.
Because, I mean, they seemed like they were obviously in the tank. I mean, there
yes.
was no oxygen for any candidate other than Donald Trump,
correct.
Unless it was negative.
I called them Trump Pravda, so yeah, I'm on
yeah.
the record on that one. Yeah.
Okay.
But the idea was, I was even willing to continue working with them despite the fact that they were very pro-Trump because, okay, every editorial
yeah.
board has its own judgment of the situation.
Right.
That's their
right.
prerogative. You know, I was a Cruz guy. They were Trump people, and they were very anti-Cruz, especially in the later days. That's their prerogative. I was basically able to write what I wanted. I think they were using me a little bit as a token, but that's my choice if I want to take the pay and be used as a token. But the breaking point came for me when they basically took their own reporter and said,
yeah.
we are more loyal to the Trump campaign than we are to you, and so we're going to pretend that our reporter is crazy and we'll join in. I mean, it's almost unprecedented
yeah.
to have somebody do that to their own reporter. And I'll give you a perfect example. Ben Terrace of the Washington Post was the other guy who was standing there, right? And he reported the
mm-hmm.
exact same account.
Yeah, they had
Trump
witnesses.
Went after the WAPO, right? Trump said, well,
right.
they're lying. They're just making this up. Ben Terrace is a liar. And the Washington Post said, hey, go F yourself, dude. I mean, like, we totally, you know, we're standing behind our reporter. He's our reporter. We hired him, right? So it's...
Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine Ben Bradley or someone from old school journalism would just throw their own reporter under the bus.
You know, I've been editor of two publications in the last couple of years, right? I was the editor at Truth Revolt, and I'm the editor at Daily Wire.
Right.
I would never throw my own. Like, if Cruz had done something where his campaign manager I have a couple female reporters. I have one particularly who follows campaigns. If you'd gone to she'd gone to an event, and one of her campaign and Cruz's campaign manager grabbed her and pulled her hard enough to bruise her arm.
Right.
I'd call up, you know, Jeff Rowe over at the Cruz campaign, and I'd say, okay, why don't you just give her an apology, right? And I wouldn't go to her and say, we're gonna come out publicly against you if you don't shut your mouth. I mean, it's just it's gross stuff.
Yeah, it's not even journalistic integrity. It's just being a gentleman,
right? Well, this is it. This is the thing that I don't get about so much of Trump is that I'm significantly more politically incorrect than he is, right? I say things like a man is a man and a woman is a woman and men should use men's bathrooms, and Trump won't even say that, right? So it's but he puts his being a jerk under the rubric of political incorrectness. So I'm going to stand there and make fun of a disabled guy, and they say, "Well, why are you mocking a disabled guy?" Well, I don't want to be politically correct. That's not politically correct.
Yeah.
That's you're just being an a right? you're just being a jerk.
Yeah.
So it discredits the entire cause of political incorrectness if you lump it together with being a piece of crap.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what bugs me. Yes, political correctness is a problem. And for me, I feel that it's more of a distraction.
Yeah.
The fact that it becomes such a big thing, it distracts from real issues that actually matter to people every day. And the fact that he constantly going around saying, the problem with this country is political correctness. I'm like, no, on the list of problems with this country, that's probably below 10.
I actually agree with him. I agree with him.
It is a problem.
I think it's a top three problem. I think it's a top three problem. I think it's a very, very big problem. Because
yeah.
I think that it prevents people from disseminating
that. Well, you've fought more than he has.
Significantly more than he has. Yeah. He's a newcomer. I mean, he's showing up. He's a little late to the battle, gang. I mean, this is the welcome to the party, pal. He's showing up now, and he's talking about political incorrectness. But this is what annoys me. Every cause for which I have fought my entire political career, he's pretending to carry the mantle of it and destroying it at the same time. Right? So political incorrectness, he says, I'm against political correctness, and so now I'm going to make fun of disabled people and say that women ought to be treated like crap and Megyn Kelly's bleeding from her wherever. And I'm sitting there going, that's not politically incorrect. That's you being a jerk. Politically incorrect is me going
on
politically incorrect is me going to Otay Ranch High School in San Diego, a low-income high school, and telling kids that you're not permanently poor in the United States unless you make bad life decisions and you're bad with money.
Yeah.
Right? That's politically incorrect. So politically incorrect, a principal comes down and tries to shut down the speech for that. Right? That's politically incorrect because that's valuable stuff people need to hear. I'm sorry, Megyn Kelly bleeding from wherever is not valuable stuff people need to hear, but is being forbidden by the evil reign of political correctness.
Now, having said all this, are you going to support the nominee?
I mean, right now, no.
Okay.
It's not my job as a conservative to support the nominee. My job as a conservative is to support
Well, then you and I are on the same page. Well, I'll shake your hand right now.
Well, you're one of the few who will. I mean, I'm a conservative before I'm a Republican.
Yeah.
And my other viewpoint here is that if we keep saying yes to everybody who's just not as bad as the Democrat, we're going to end up with Democrat. It's going to be the Democrat Party, and then not even the Democrat Party light. It's just going to be the Democratic Party with a shade less socialism. And if those are the two choices, I mean, we've seen in California. We did the same thing in California, right? We did with Schwarzenegger. I made that mistake already. I voted for Schwarzenegger, right? I stumped for Schwarzenegger. I said he's going to be, we need a Republican. It'll get people used to voting Republican. He'll be better than Cruz Bustamante. Mm-hmm. It'll be fine. Okay, so he comes in. He does nothing for 8 years, right? And then Jerry Brown comes in, doubles the budget, and he's the dictator for life. So and the Republican Party's defunct. So how well did that work out exactly? It turns out that when you sell out your principles for victory, you end up with neither victory nor principles.
Yeah, and it's pretty depressing to be forced with the worst choice of the lesser of two evils that has ever happened in my lifetime.
That's right. I mean, listen, I was even down on Romney, right? I wrote a column in January 2012 called No on Mitt Romney. I didn't support him in the primaries because I didn't trust him on his conversion on Obamacare because it's ridiculous. I didn't trust him even on abortion because he as governor of the state, he'd done some pretty liberal things on abortion. I had real problems with Mitt Romney as a candidate. But I was willing to countenance the better of two evils or lesser of two evils argument with Romney over Obama. I'm not willing to countenance that argument with somebody who's a career Democrat. I mean, how far are we willing to go here? Is there any line that we aren't willing to cross? I asked Dennis Prager this. I said to him, is there any Republican you think would be better than Hillary Clinton who you wouldn't vote for? And he said, well, give me an example. I said, okay, David Duke. Right, David Duke ran for governor of Louisiana, and when that happened in 1996, the Louisiana Republican Party threw the election to the Democrats. They said, we're not going to be represented by David Duke. And he said, well, I don't think Donald Trump is David Duke. And I said, well, I don't draw my line at David Duke.
Yeah.
right? So that's it. I draw my line, and Trump has moved beyond it. He's passed my line, and I'm not going to allow him to be the standard bearer for my philosophy.
Well, yeah, and for the integrity of the party, it seems to me that we have to at least make some kind of a fight and show that we're not just a bunch of ignorant sheep.
Well,
that some of us aren't.
That too. I mean, as I say,
just for the future, so that we can hold our heads up and be respected as a party down the line.
If you keep saying yes to whoever comes in and who's just in, and it's somebody who's progressively more left, then what does your party stand for in the end? It's just, and I think that you can see how rough this is on Paul Ryan, who I'm much more conservative than. Yeah. Paul Ryan, I mean, he looks like he wants to hang himself every day. I mean, he's 5 seconds away from taking that tie and wrapping it around a pole.
Yeah.
I mean, the awkwardness on Paul Ryan's face. I don't think Ryan's a bad guy, but the awkwardness on his face when he's asked about defending all these Trump things, and he just says, well, I can't defend it.
Yeah.
It's like, well, yeah, is this really... I love the argument that this is better for the down ticket. What's better for the down ticket is to say, I'll vote for Trump, but because he's the lesser of two evils, and then defend all of his crap. And it's like, you have never talked to a congressional candidate.
Yeah, and what
like,
world
not
is
one.
This better down ticket?
He's going to... Trump's destroying us down ticket. Right now, the latest Reuters tracking poll has generic Republicans down 11 points in the House.
Yeah.
He's destroying people down ticket. If you're in a swing state, if you're in or a liberal state like Oregon, and you're running for Congress, and you have to sit there out every day, and you're asked questions about Mexican judges, what are you supposed to do with that? And it's not like Trump's going to drive up your turnout. He's not. His turnout's going to be abysmal.
Yeah, I had Senator Mitch McConnell on earlier in the week.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's upping his heart meds because he's so concerned.
Listen, I mean,
he's about to lose his majority leadership.
Oh, yeah, no, he's definitely going to lose it given the current status. I mean, I interviewed Mitch McConnell on this exact issue, and I really put it to him. I said, like, why are you doing this? Do you really think that, you know, do you really think that this is going to help you in any way? Where do you draw the line? What are you doing here? But, you know, this is my problem with the Republicans in general is they don't draw lines. Right?
Yeah.
The same Mitch McConnell who's willing to cave to Trump is the same Mitch McConnell who says, well, after the election, we'll give an up or down vote on whoever the Democratic nominee is. And I keep thinking to myself, why? Did your obligations under the Constitution just change? Like, did 13 months on the calendar mean that we now have to appoint somebody who's a wild leftist to fill Scalia's seat?
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
Talking about your fight on the political correctness front, you've given a lot of speeches on college campuses with the Young Americans Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
Denouncing this increasing wussiness on the part of universities with, you know, the microaggression policies and safe spaces and all of this nonsense sensitivity counseling. You see this as a deliberate suppression of free speech. And the irony is they've pretty much proven you right when you were supposed to speak at Cal State LA and they tried to shut you down.
I mean, that's not
smart because you're a lawyer.
Yeah. No, yeah. No,
so how did that play out?
Well, I mean, it played out poorly for them. First of all, the president of the university tried to stop me from speaking, and I told him he could, you know, go do things to himself that were anatomically impossible. and we were coming anyway. And so we did go anyway. And then he said there would be security. And then he let security allow people to block all the doors. And there was a near riot, and they locked people inside. They pulled the fire alarm. It was really bad. I wasn't even out in the crowd. There were people out in the crowd getting pushed around and punched, and it was bad stuff. And so, you know, that did not play well for them, considering the theme of my speech was basically diversity of thought over diversity of race. And so, but the same thing happened at Penn State. I went there to talk about diversity of thought, and they have people standing outside the room trying to rush the doors, screaming, "Let us in, let us in." And you know, they're just trying to get in so that they can yell at me and try and, you know, yell at people and hit them maybe. And it's really bad. We had, one of the funnier ones, I went and spoke at UNC at North Carolina. Chapel Hill, and the room was packed. I mean, it was like 450 kids, and I knew somebody had told me beforehand that the Black Lives Matter movement was planning a walkout. So before I started, I said, and I would just say to anybody who's thinking about walking out, why don't you stick around and ask some questions, and we can have like an honest discussion here instead of you just being puerile children and ideological fascists. And so 5 minutes in, they get up and they walk out, of course, which is fine. I mean, there are 150 people waiting outside to get in, so they immediately filled those seats back in. But
what is their issue? What is their argument?
That this is our space, that people who disagree with us are racist, sexist, bigot, homophobes, that sort of speech is hate speech and inappropriate and hurts feelings. This is why I say political correctness is a problem, because it's going to end in legislation. And I do think that the Supreme Court at some point is in the not too far future is going to start ruling that hate speech is not free speech. And then we're in serious trouble. Yeah, exactly. Like Canada or Britain.
Do you think that the term hate speech means anything anymore, even?
I mean,
if you look back
in
the 50s and civil rights, or
not in any real way.
World War II, the Nazis, yes, but I feel like it's almost insulting to people that it's lost all meaning now.
Well, this is the problem with the left. I mean, they conflate fake racism with actual racism, and fake hateful speech with actual hateful speech. Like Sally Cohn did this on the panel 1 second ago. She said, well, Newt Gingrich said that Obama was a food stamp president. That's a racial dog whistle. I was like, wait, there are more white people than black people on food stamps. And she was like, yeah, but everybody who thinks of food stamps thinks of black people. I said, well, maybe you do. So that's it. But it's the idea is that everything we say is coded racial messaging. Yeah. And when they say things that are openly racial, like white police officers are constantly discriminating against black people, and policies like stop and frisk are aimed at harming black people and putting them in prison. When they say these sorts of things, that actually is racist stuff, and they pretend that it's not. It's very irritating, and it's scary. I mean, yes, there are things that are hateful, but I get hit with a lot of so-called hate speech, right? I mean, when my baby was born, I tweeted out that my baby was born, and I got hit immediately with the alt-right idiots online hitting me with gas chamber memes, right? And so that sort of stuff exists. Do I want them regulated? Hell no. Let them say they're stupid. I retweet them when they do that, because let the whole world see how stupid you are.
Oh, yeah. Expose
and one of the great ironies of the white supremacist movement is it's represented by people who are the most intellectually inferior people on the planet. Like, if you're going to make the case for white supremacism, at least don't be a dumbass while you're doing it. I mean, it's an ideologically and morally asinine argument, but it's amazing to watch dumb people argue they're superior.
Well, yeah, the perfect example is, wasn't it a Huffington Post blogger who just recently pulled the Nazi card and compared you to Hitler? I'm guessing they don't know you're an Orthodox Jew, right?
Well, it was a Cal State professor, too. I mean,
I'm honestly,
my head is spinning after this election cycle. I've been called a Nazi by the Black Lives Matter movement. I've been called a Black Lives Matter movement person by David Duke. I'm just confused. Here I am just standing here saying things that are true, and this makes me persona non grata in all of the the movements of the moment. But fortunately, I don't really care that much, so that's okay.
Well, let's talk about how you handle that argument before we go. You had a great book that came out, How to Debate Leftists and Destroy Them, 11 Rules for a Winning Argument.
Mm-hmm.
Can you walk us through just a few of the key points to verbally sparring with a liberal?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing is, so it's an ebook. You can get it for like 99 cents. But the ebook is basically 11 rules taken largely but not completely from my Piers Morgan debate on gun control, where I kind of lay out how I do that. And the first thing is you have to understand they're going to attack your character, and you have to take that argument off the table immediately. So if they attack your – if you know they're going to call you a racist, the proper response is not, here are all the reasons I'm not a racist. It's you're racist.
You don't have
racist
to be on the defensive.
Right. You should never be on the defensive. Everything is attack, attack, attack. Everything is – reverse the polarity. If they're asking you a question, reverse it and ask them a question. So I did this to Sally, on stage a few minutes ago. She asked me a question, and it was like the basis of the question was wrong. So I said, I don't mean to be Talmudic, but let me ask you a question in response. And then I asked her a chain of about three questions, and it was clear by the end of the questions that – her logic did not hold. That's one of the tips. You don't have to buy into just because somebody cites a figure that you're supposed to be allied with doesn't mean you have to agree. Mm-hmm. So if somebody says Ronald Reagan said X, so what? Sometimes he says things are right, sometimes he says things are wrong. Same thing with Trump.
Well, before we go, I saw that you have a new book coming out in October, and it's a novel.
Yeah, it's a novel. Yeah, it's called True Allegiance, and if you go online and you order it right now and you send me an email, then I'll send you a signed receipt, then I'll send you a signed sticker you can slap
in there.
Yeah,
check that out. Well, again, you can check out Ben Shapiro on KRLA's The Morning Answer and his podcast, The Ben Shapiro Show, available on iTunes, just like this one, and also at dailywire.com. Ben Shapiro, thanks for chatting with me.
Hey, thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Thanks again to Ben Shapiro for coming on the show, and thanks to the folks at Politicon for hosting our interview. If you enjoyed my chat with Ben, you can visit his news site for articles by Ben Shapiro and others at dailywire.com. You can follow him on Twitter at Ben Shapiro, and check out his podcast, The Ben Shapiro Show, available on iTunes just like this podcast. Please subscribe to Kick-Ass Politics on iTunes and leave us a review while you're there. And you can also help us reach our fundraising goal for the year and get rewarded by donating to our Patreon campaign at patreon.com/kickasspolitics. Follow us on Twitter at KAPolitics or visit Kick-Ass Politics on Facebook. And while you're there, recommend Kick-Ass Politics to your friends on your social media. And as always, I welcome your comments, questions, and suggestions at comments@kickasspolitics.com. But for now, I'm Ben Mathis, and thanks for listening to Kick-Ass Politics. Kick-Ass Politics is a trademark of Mathis Entertainment, Inc.